thanks for joining us for the Changing the Industry podcast, where we try to effectuate change for the better, one conversation at a time. Part of that change is providing help for those that need it. This is why we've partnered with the Institute for Automotive Business Excellence. Whether it's help with sales, operations, or just getting your numbers in order, these folks are some of the very best in the industry. And for our listeners, they'll sit down with you and go over your strengths, your weaknesses, and the opportunities that are in front of you. They'll create a customized plan for how to move forward, absolutely free. That's right, free. And if your plan includes one-on-one coaching, they can also help you with that. There's no hard sales pitch, no obligation, just honest help from honest people. So if that's something that you think could benefit you, make sure you click on the link in the show notes. And now, on to the show.
I'm not very photogenic either, so.
It'll work out perfectly.
It'll better work. Than us.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me tell you. You just get used to how ugly you are on camera, and you're like,
yeah. It works out. Yeah. It works out. I was extremely thankful that they made our cardboard cutout so blurry. Yeah. they didn't try to take it any further. So that was awesome.
I sent her a high resolution shot. It was like, you know, 8,000 by 6,000.
Yeah.
But I guess by the time they did all of the heavy editing to thin me out, stretch me up.
He was officially at least 6 inches taller.
I was going to say, yeah, I made six? Your regular height.
Regular height. Yeah, I am regular height. Thank you. You guys are just freakishly tall.
They said, look, we want a 2 6-foot cardboard cutouts. And they were like, whoa, man. Like, we can do a lot, but that stretch feature is going to look awful skewed.
They pulled it off, though. They did a good job.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a good time. That was a real good time. Yeah. Except for the fact that you don't like being around people. That probably was taxing.
You have to be nice to everybody. And it's hard.
In your force, I saw you talking to Eric Merchant.
I love Eric. He's good people.
He's awesome.
He really
so
is.
So nice.
He really is. And as many people as I tried to come get you or to come give you hugs, not many people did it.
Eric did. I hugged him back.
Oh, that was sweet.
We had a whole moment.
A moment?
Yeah.
Was it caught on video?
It was. It was on the camera.
Very nice. Yeah.
And he has his hair combed this week, too.
Huh? I saw that.
Yeah. Eric, he had his hair combed because he didn't bring a hat.
Oh, dude.
That's impressive. Corey, introduce yourself.
I'm Corey Rosema. I own Rosema's Car Care in Hudsonville, Michigan, with my wife and I. We bought that as a family business. My wife and I took it over Memorial Weekend of 2016.
Nice. And it's like really taken off here recently, it feels like. Am I just seeing more of your stuff on the internet, or is it just that things are happening?
I mean, we've always pretty consistently grown since day one. You know, my dad was 65, retired, or retiring, had no debt, you know, had $200 a month in homeowners association dues because for my mom in his condo. So he was, you know, answered the phones when he felt like working and then didn't when he didn't want to.
Yeah.
So it was just a matter of answering the phones and getting cars in. And, but lately, like, maybe 2 months ago, I asked one of our service advisors to really go get Facebook and Instagram, and she's taken our little Wednesday videos that we do.
Yeah.
Just gone gangbusters with it.
For sure. I've seen like a lot of them. And typically, like, we're friends with a lot of shops, so we see a lot of stuff, but usually it's like cookie cutter and it's things where it's always the same. And I've noticed like your videos are making it through the algorithm, which is pretty impressive, right?
Yeah.
Especially as many shops as we are friends with. It's pretty cool.
I don't click on anybody's stuff. So.
You're a pretty hateful person. You know that?
It clogs up your feed with other like cars. I don't want to look at cars. That's the last thing I wanted to look at.
I'm friends with some of your technicians.
Yeah.
Really awesome guys.
They're fantastic.
And you have built a really unique culture in the shop. It's been very interesting to watch that play out. What were the keys to that when you think back about, was it just finding the right people or was it?
I think a lot of it was realizing one day I walked out there, and outside of Luke, who's here,
yeah,
I had a complete staff turnover in like 30 days.
Yeah.
And when you first took over?
No, this was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
2.5 years ago.
Why?
I was a horrible person. I mean, I was a nice guy, but I was not a very good boss.
What made you a bad boss?
I had a pretty short fuse.
Oh.
Yeah. I was trying to play dad as opposed to employer. And
you know, sometimes you got to play dad, but you were like a mean dad.
Yeah. 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 It was not great. You know, we didn't have anything written down. Mm-hmm. You know, I was kind of the opinion everyone should know how I want them to do it, because yeah, I had it stored in my head.
Sure.
And
but it was never on paper. It was never conveyed to them.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, during the interview process, I was, you know, this is kind of what the expectation was. And it was 3 or 4 sentences. And,
yeah,
you know, 6 weeks into it, 8 weeks into it, 2 years into employment, all of a sudden they're like, well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, how do you not know that? But it wasn't a question. It was a big thing. Yeah.
Blow up.
Yeah. So how Luke decided to endure all of that is still, when I ask him, he's like, I don't know, it just never really bothered me. Which, yeah, I mean, you met Luke in ASTE yeah, last year, and he's yeah, here today, or this week as well. But yeah, it was a tough thing to see. Like, I just walked out into the shop and I'm just like, how did this happen?
It was maybe last year at the Institute Summit that we talked to a shop owner, and he said one of the heaviest things he ever did is, he said he had seen it many times, but it never clicked with him. But he happened to open his QuickBooks employee or whatever, you know, where it shows all the employees.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, yeah, like, I looked at that, and he said, I've been doing this for all these years. Holy cow, I've been through a lot of employees.
Yeah.
And he said, that feels really heavy now. And he said, you know, I'm getting to the point I'm ready to retire. And I look at that, and I'm like, holy crap, dude. I don't want to keep doing this. I don't want to keep, like, struggling to find those people. And I think there has to be that self-reflection to look at it and say, hold up, maybe I'm part of the problem here.
And I mean, I wasn't part of the problem. I mean, it was very apparent. Like, I was.
Yeah.
So.
But what was catalyst, though? Because self-awareness is severely lacking.
I mean, I always took it really personal when an employee left.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I only just fired my very first employee 5-6 months ago.
Really?
So
most of the time they quit then.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And in most cases it was ugly. You know, like, but you one took person it
personally though. Was there one thing that all of a sudden you're like, oh crap, I gotta fix this?
I think it was that one Monday morning I walked out there and I'm like, God, I have Luke. And that's it for my, you know, Luke was the second person I ever hired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and he was 15, 16. We're a little unclear on that, but
yeah.
I insist he rode his bike the first week to work. He says, I'm pretty sure I drove, but whatever. But it was, yeah, like, it was gut wrenching. And,
well, what was the, let's they dig had into
all,
that.
Yeah. They had all quit. You show up Monday morning, like, you just lost the one guy and then another guy. And then you show up Monday morning, you're like, I don't have any employees. Like, where the hell did my staff go?
Well, I mean, I was staffed. I mean, you know, by the grace of God, like, I never had massive issues hiring, mm-hmm, you know, and we had good tools. We had good equipment. It was clean.
Yeah.
Well lit. So people wanted to work there. It's just, they didn't want to work for me for very long. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I guess it's really, it's a kind of a challenge to pinpoint exactly what it was outside of, like, I walked out into the shop that morning and I'm like, I just, okay. You know, we had our very first staff meeting 30 seconds after that.
What? So step one, staff meeting.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
Hey, you know, like, let's get to know each other. I'm going to make an effort of apologizing.
Right.
Because I never really had a problem apologizing to my kids when I was a bad dad, but I would never thought about apologizing to my employees when I would go home and talk to my wife, like, yeah, this guy did this and this guy did this. And my wife has no problem holding me accountable.
Yeah.
She's like, you know, it sounds like you're kind of a jerk. I'm like, yeah, well, you know, whatever.
Did when she said that, was there ever a little bit of a tinge that was like, maybe I should do something different? Maybe I should apologize. Maybe I should.
I mean, probably. But at the same time, she's fairly involved. You know, she does all the accounts payable, payroll, things like that. She knows everybody that works there.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe like subconsciously, you know, she didn't say I should, so it can't be that bad.
Yeah.
And then when I came home that day and just told her, she's like, well, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. Because
that's always kind of been her deal.
Right.
And we did. And I think it was shortly after that, I was scanning through Facebook. And at that point in time, I was not involved with, but communicated back and forth with another Facebook group. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if, you know, the Mechanics Alliance people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
sure.
And one guy just always asked amazing questions. Excuse me. And he's like, I don't really like where I work and blah, blah, blah. So I Facebook stalked him, and that was Andrew.
Yep. Yep. That's what I was going to say is I know that when Andrew came in, I'd been watching you for a little bit, but it seemed like there was a shift when yep. Andrew came in.
Yeah. And I mean, he definitely had a big part in it. And my shop manager, John, came on right around the same time as Andrew.
Okay.
You know, we had gotten to the point where I really needed to have like two legit or even three legit A techs in the shop. And
yeah.
Luke was almost there. Andrew, I thought was I wasn't quite sure. Like I was,
yeah.
No matter what, I got to come work for me. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And a manager at that time was easier to hire. So I hired John and I just stayed wrenching.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, when Andrew came on, he lives.
Who's doing the advising?
I had so her name was Kelly. She doesn't work for me anymore. She moved on. Her dad had some health issues and stuff like that. Wonderful person. She actually installed shopware in my shop, and she's like, this is never going to work. I'm not very tech savvy. Did a wonderful job.
Right.
You yeah. know? But so that was that. We were just very informal prior to having shopware.
Yeah.
Everything's on pen and paper. Hand it to her. She writes them all up, calls the customers. What they want to do, we do. And what they don't, we don't.
Yeah.
But, yeah, when Andrew came in, him and Luke clicked immediately.
Yeah.
And now when I talk to their wives, it's like these two, they text back and forth.
Constantly, yeah.
Nonstop.
Yeah. And it's definitely, it seems like a pretty warm environment compared to what it was when we first met, right? Like, it seems like a very different environment when I talk to your guys. They're completely different than what I would have expected based on what I had seen you post prior to that, you know?
Yeah. And, I mean, they love the industry. I mean, they eat, breathe, sweat, and bleed it. And it's nice to not be the only one there that's the same way.
Yeah. I've noticed that you seem happier in the shop. Like when I see your videos and stuff, you seem more engaged than you were. Because you had done a little bit of social media stuff when we first met, but you hadn't done that much.
Well, we did. We started doing like the, you know, Rosemont's Car Care Olympics thing.
Yeah.
Like a week before COVID started.
Yeah.
And then COVID hit and the whole world closed down. And our little community of Hudsonville and Jenison, I mean, they thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we were getting like 30,000 views a week on our little videos.
Yeah.
And, well, you've watched them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're kind of weird. You know, right. Like they're not how to fix your car. It's watch us do dumb stuff on the internet.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it's, I enjoy going to work every single day.
Yeah. But I mean, I think I've seen a shift in you though. Right. I think you have enjoyed it more here recently than you did a while back.
Yeah. I mean, I get to work on the business instead of in the business. And I'm part of two mentorship groups that are all West Michigan based, and they're helping a ton. And I mean, it's fantastic. I mean,
so
I have.
Go back to the you decide you want to make a shift. Okay. So there was at least some type of catalyst there. You lost a bunch of employees. you walk in and you're like, hey, let's get to know each other. Like, you still need to know how to make the change. Or did you always have it in you? Maybe you were just taking out your aggression at the shop. Like, how did you make that shift?
So I think probably a lot of it was John, my service manager, him and I were friends for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And after that, he sat me down and just said, we need to get everything out of your head and put it on paper. And, you know, that's what I did. You know, I opened up my little notepad on my phone and I just hit record and I just started talking. And then it was all in text at that point. So then it was just cut, copy, paste, and edit and make it somewhat legible. And then all of a sudden I hand it out and they're like, oh, that all makes sense now. Now I understand why you were frustrated or whatever.
Well, and when you present them with that data, now they have a chance and opportunity to come back and say, hey, yeah, I don't think that's going to work like that. Like, that just doesn't play that way.
Right. Yeah. And again, that led to another one of my really good employees leaving.
Okay.
You know, because nothing really had changed outside of now it's on paper.
Yeah.
But when that employee left, that then made room for Andrew. And, you know, I would say that he was as much of a catalyst as anything else, because like he made Luke want to get better. Luke made Andrew want to get better. And then we got busier as a result of their talent and skill. So then we had to add another person. But
it's still, I'm just trying to get to, cause this always gets glanced over, which just drives me bananas, because I like to get into the nitty gritty sometimes. The exact steps, did you have a mentor? Did you have a coach? Did you read a couple books? Did you get on some podcasts? Like, the self-awareness is one thing. That's a huge portion of it. And once you cross that threshold and you go, oh, it's not just about me. I have to understand how this other person feels about this situation. And they have unique perspective, and they've got unique life experiences. And so I'm going to try to understand them, right? And then try to come to a mutual agreement. That whole process is not natural.
Right.
It's not innate. That has to be learned, because it's not ingrained in us biologically.
Sure. Right?
So what steps did you take, or did you always have it there? And you just, that's what I'm asking. Like, were you're always like this, like engaged and understanding person, except when you got to the shop and something set you off and then you're like, screw those guys and rail on them.
I think that's such an important question. And the reason for that is because there's a lot of shop owners in that situation, right? And they don't really know where to go to make that transformation. They don't know how to take that next step to start fixing things. And I've always been a people person, so I've never been in those shoes necessarily, but also recognize that I know a lot of people who, when faced with a challenge like that, would be a little bit embarrassed to stand up and say, like, hey, yo, this has not been working, and I'm going to own that, right? That kind of extreme ownership, taking that next step to say, all right, let's fix this and let's get moving. I get that it was super inspiring to look and see the shop empty of all the old employees. Like David said, what was that next step? What was that catalyst that kind of pushed that through? How did you?
I don't know. We moved past the catalyst. I just want to know what steps you took. Like, what's the next? Did you sit down and read Seven Habits? Did you like?
No, I can barely read it all. No, not really. I'm not a big book reader. I listen to podcasts. Started listening to your guys' podcast, asking questions of shop owners that I thought were good. And I mean, just being as credibly open and transparent with my employees as I possibly could. So I think I probably still had a lot of the same conversations I did prior, but instead of coming at it angry, mm-hmm. I would I think I would almost use the exact same words, just in a different tone.
Yeah.
And hey, this is what I'm thinking. What's running through your head right now, as opposed to walking over there and be like, what the hell did you guys just do? That was the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah.
And giving them the option of, or the opportunity to answer.
Yeah.
And knowing like it's no repercussions kind of an answer.
Yeah.
You know, because no one wants to quit their job. I mean, you know.
And now they're giving you feedback, and now you guys can have a conversation, and you can both grow and move on from the situation and make things better. It makes sense.
Yeah. And I, you know, you don't always necessarily agree, but, you know, I mean, I tell everybody when I hire them in, I'm kind of the opinion that my way is the right way, and everybody does everything my way until you can show me your way is better, and then I'll adapt it, and I'll, and that's the way it will be for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, when I was a tech, I was pretty productive, you know, and I kind of thought the same way. I was called like all kinds of things to the tech, you know, diva, whatever other words, you know, prima donna.
Yeah.
You know, all this other stuff. And I think just being open to other people's opinions and being willing to say, hey, that's a fantastic idea. I'm going to claim it as my own. I'll give you credit right now so I can institute it across everybody else. But I'm going to go to the handbook, which I'll use that term very loosely, change it, put in your process, and hand it out to everybody else. And now they know.
That willingness to go to them and allow them to develop policy, process, and procedure in the shop gives them ownership of that.
Yep.
Right? And, you know, I'll never forget one of the defining factors for me when it comes to the leadership style that I took, and like in my shop, the way that I lead my people is if they make a mistake, I make fun of them consistently for at least a week about it. Right. And like, we just absolutely give each other a really hard time. And so that's how, you know, you're being reprimanded, right? Is that I'm absolutely busting you over it. But
the unfortunate thing about Lucas, he is a politician. Right, he's got that cult of personality. So people like, you know, they're like, oh, Lucas.
Sure.
And then that's it. It doesn't go past that. So if you end up working for him, you find out that he's cruel, mean, constantly berating you.
Nice.
But because he does it in like this, like fun loving, warm, you're like, ah, oh, that's just Lucas. It's okay. Did you hear what he said about you? Yeah, but you know, it's like, did he really just pull that prank on you? Yeah, it's okay. It's Lucas. It's like, you get away with it. Nobody else would. So whatever works for you does not work for anybody else in the entirety of the world.
Yeah.
You're just completely oblivious to it. I point it out all the time. Nobody listens to me. Whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, he's probably right. I'll give him credit for that.
That's a challenge too, right? Of becoming going from tech to shop owner.
Yeah.
You know, I do think that all of my employees are my friends, and I tell them all they're an extension of my family, but I make a conscious effort of like not doing that because I want there to be that whatever separation or whatever word you want to use.
Yeah.
But I fight that urge a ton.
I can't. That is like our culture in the shop is like, if we're not making fun of each other, I'm going to quit.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely going to quit.
Yeah. That's the thing though. Like I'm the same way. Like I've got to go in and I come in and I just distract. That's what I do. I come in, I distract, I make things a mess and then I leave. And so when I come in though, I come in to cut up and crack jokes and then I don't help anything.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason.
Yeah. I know. I feel like now I'm at the spot where I do come in to help.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh God, Corey's going to try to write this ticket or Corey's going to make this phone call or don't order parts, Corey. It's already been taken care of.
Yeah. Just get out of the way.
So, I mean, what do you do at that point? You really don't need to be there. They don't want you there. That's the idea. And I think my shop would be that way, except that I'm probably running a slightly understaffed up front. I need if I had one more person to help Juan just answer the phones, at the very least answer the phones, I wouldn't ever need to show up or be there or anything, like, at all.
Yeah.
Like, they would just go about their business and not bother me, and I wouldn't bother them. Everybody's happy.
Yeah. I decided to open up an ADOS shop.
Yeah. That's all that.
Sucks. Yeah.
And so now that moved your. Yeah. No, he's been successful. He's not like you.
He did something with it. I marketed my services.
I would use that term successful very loosely. Like, okay. January, total revenue is $900.
Hey, that's way more than David did all last year with his ADOS shop.
Yeah.
No, I'm correct. Yeah. 900.
Yeah. In February, we paid the rent for that building, but didn't pay any staff or electric or internet or even like the shopware bill. So Rosemus Car Care is still footing the bill for that. But
where's the, let me ask you this then, where is the business coming from? Are they coming from body shops?
Yeah.
Are they coming from?
Yeah. So the Rosemus Car Care side of it, we have three body shops that feed us work. One of them has their own ADOS facility. So they just do everything that way. But it was literally going door to door.
Okay.
You know, getting body shops to, hey, this is real. You know, it's maybe you're not doing a ton of it, but you're probably doing more than what you think.
The facilities that have done really well with calibration are facilities that have someone that can explain the insurance process to the DRP facility or whoever it is, so they get paid for it.
Yep.
Right? And that they can clearly lay out and document. And what they do is they build a document that they give to the body shop, who then gives that to the insurer. And the insurer says, oh, they've crossed all their T's and dotted all their I's. We know this is by the book. And so that's how they've become successful.
At a bare minimum, though, you need to go out and make sales calls and introduce yourself to shops in the area.
And honestly, like, we added two more body shops to the Rosemus Car Care side by trying to educate them on that. They're like, we're not going to mess with the ADOS stuff, but you guys will do our alignments and our mechanical stuff. Well, I mean, that wasn't the original idea, but absolutely we'll do it.
Yeah.
And then, well, hey, this car's in, you know, it needs the camera calibrated after you do an alignment now. And then they'll say, oh, okay, well, we didn't know that. So yeah, just go ahead and do it.
Y'all,
but they're taking bumpers off.
Oh yeah.
And putting them back on,
yeah,
and saying we're not going to mess with it,
yeah, because well, we didn't unplug it.
It doesn't matter.
I know that, but
they should know that,
and they're the ones doing the work. And you know, insurance companies are still there to make money. So if they don't have to pay for it, insurance companies don't care. So I mean, but you can't get in an argument with it with the people, because then they're for sure not going to give you the business.
Yep. Yeah.
So then you just...
No, I'd be pissing everybody off. Just incredulity. Just kicking things over. Going, this is ridiculous. You're going to kill somebody.
And there's software out there like ADOS Think and Rev ADOS that you can upload the invoices to, and they'll scrub it and say, oh yeah, this repair requires this calibration. This repair requires this calibration.
Yeah.
And it's not overly expensive. You know, one is... You know,
it's in service information. Like, at least, like, all data has it broken down to.
All that is great.
If you touch this, these things have to happen. An alignment. You have to calibrate this now. So, like, it's gotten to the point now, anything past, like, 16, 17 comes in, and we're doing any steering, suspension, headlights.
Yeah.
Anything like that. Like, we're checking now.
What the challenge always comes back to something we've talked about over and over again, though. Is that all of these other facilities are just saying, "Man, we'll align it. We don't care."
Oh yeah,
right. And so you go to them with a $400 bill to align the car.
They don't know though, and they're not checking.
They absolutely know. They don't care.
Yeah, because especially when you're dealing with dealerships, because a lot of dealers are independent. So you know they don't know. Yep. You know, so
when the dealers know, but they don't care because they want the price point to be the correct price point for the customer, or what the customer thinks is should be the price point, but they're taking on a massive amount of liability.
Well, so what I know of, you know, we were talking about my friend at the dealer the other day.
Yeah.
So they eat the calibration when the alignment requires a calibration. They just eat it. They don't charge the client for it. And so they just pay the tech and calibrate the car because it's required equipment anyway. So they have to have the equipment. The chain store around me, they just, when it pops up on the alignment machine and says, hey, this car requires calibration,
boop, next.
Yep.
If they were so money hungry, though, why wouldn't it make sense for them to go, this is going to be a profit center for us? Because all these, we are the authority on this Toyota. And if we tell them, hey, this takes a calibration, it's $250 more, and they're not going to argue with them. They're like, well, I'm at the Toyota dealer. They know my Toyota.
I think that part of it is especially your service advisors in a dealership world, the only thing they care about is CSR. And that's because their bonuses are built into the CSR. So if they get a bad rating on one client's CSR, it kills their bonus for the month.
Yep.
So they're encouraging the tech, hey, don't calibrate this thing. Or if you have to calibrate it, let's do it like this. We'll just work it in and we'll cover it. Right, because it doesn't matter to them because they
know.
That's
going to throw off their profitability, though. If they're looking at their GP numbers going, hey, why did we pay this tech an extra 2.5 hours this month to do what? Calibrations? You didn't collect any money for these calibrations.
And who knows? Maybe they're even paying somebody just to do alignments and calibrations. Cheaper employee.
I don't know. This doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, it's not rocket science. Like, once you know how to do it, it's not... No, challenging work. Yeah,
it's super easy. It's super easy. The problem is the, hey, why won't it calibrate? Everything should be right.
Yeah.
And now you're looking for, oh, this is 7 mil paint, and this is supposed to only be 5 mil paint, and it's not zapping through the bumper because it's too thick a paint because you put so many coats on, or you put the wrong mix on. Or
when we had that event at Caldwell Community College, Jim said, he said, you know, he said that trigonometry that you guys did not take is going to be very important when it comes to a car not calibrating. And I'm like, well,
he says that, but also I took trig. I took trigonometry.
I thought you said you choked trig.
I took it. I don't remember any of it, but I took it.
So what's next for Rosema's Car Care then?
He doesn't have anything else to ask you. That's why I asked you that question.
No,
that's fair. You ask those terrible questions.
No, I'm curious. He we've talked about up to this point. And I'm friends with Andrew.
He opened an ADOS calibration. He's got to build that up. It didn't even pay the bills.
For a man that's backed into a corner, you sure are gutsy.
Why is it always violence with you? It was terrible.
Maybe you should ask David what's next for Rosema's Car Care. I mean, he wants to answer the question, but no.
What's next for Rosema's Car Care?
I just think we need to move on to the question. We need to talk about Gretchen Whitmer. That's what we need to talk about. Our next president.
we're going to talk about politics.
I'm going to thank you, Michigan. How do
Michigan.
You say no, but how do you say somebody from Michigan?
Oh, Michiganders.
Michigander. There you go. I'm going to thank all Michiganders for giving us that jewel.
My wife is going to listen to this now, and she's going to be like, all she's going to hear is Michiganders, because that's how she says it. Michiganders.
That's how you say it, though, right?
Yeah, but just like the way she says it is.
Is she from a certain part of Michigan?
No, she's like from West Michigan, you know, Grand Rapids area, but I don't know. Maybe it's somebody somewhere said you have to say it like this, and it just drives my wife insane.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I'm saying it wrong.
Maybe you're saying it right, but it is what it is. That's okay.
I'm going to pull up how Gretchen Whitmer says it so I can model my voice just like her.
I don't even know who she is or what she is.
She's the governor.
No.
She's the governor, and she was a wonderful, wonderful governor, and they voted her back in. They voted her back in. I don't know what happened to poor Tudor. Did you vote for Tudor or Gretchen?
I voted for Tudor.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is why I brought it up, because you looked like a Tudor kind of guy.
Yeah.
But I saw that and laughed and laughed and laughed. It's like the same thing happens when I see your employees come back to work every single time. And I'm like, you're going to go back in for that abuse again? Yeah, well, you know. Like, okay, good luck.
You know, typically, it worked. We've got Nerf guns.
Yeah.
We have tennis ball launchers and Nerf guns at work. Now, the Nerf guns were December's idea, and it's a rapid load. They've got these little blue Nerf balls. Mm. They're actually pretty painful.
Are they the balls or the big jumbo bullets?
No. They're like little blue foam balls.
Those are the ones that they never jam.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They don't really jam. And it's rapid fire, buddy. And so the good news is I'm going to start packing one. And bringing it with me.
And just nail it.
Make sure you take it on the airplane with you. That'll probably go.
I know, right?
Yeah.
See?
Well, yeah. Just wave it around in the cabin.
I'll put it in my check bag.
You know, we actually did that as one of our Rosemont's Caracare things, a shooting gun. We brought the Nerf guns to the shop and target practiced.
I think I remember that.
Yeah.
I think I saw that. Wasn't it tire bowling or something like that?
We've done tire bowling. We used floor jacks as scooters and raced them around the parking lot.
The problem I would have with something like that is that would go on off camera too. And it wouldn't be for the camera. They'd just be doing that.
Yeah.
And somebody would get hurt and then you're like, oh, what happened? Why is your leg backwards? Well, see, I was scooting down. And I rammed it into this car. By the way, this car is dented too.
I haven't had that happen. Now that's all I'm going to think about.
You need to have your insurance guy come out and look at it and go, am I insured for this? He's going to be like, no.
In fact, we're going to cancel your policy.
So. Yeah, exactly. You know, I can't remember who it was a while back. Said we were shooting people with Nerf guns. And they said, you've never been sued, have you? No,
I'm not. I'm well insured against it, getting sued. But have you ever had one like fall into an engine or somewhere it shouldn't be?
I'm gonna incriminate myself. There are probably little blue Nerf balls all over the places they shouldn't be. What is that coming out of that oil plug? Huh. Oh, okay.
It's Nerf, right? So it'll probably just the oil will eat it up, and
yeah,
if it gets in the
it's gonna polish components, right? It's foam, so it's gonna clean as it goes through. Yeah.
It's gonna be like adding transmission fluid to the engine oil.
Yeah, see, this is gonna be fine. Nothing to worry about. Nothing. Hey, to
that
see
was a
here.
Thing back in the day.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Not anymore. Don't do that.
I worked for Acura, and that was one of the fixes for the TSXs that would always get gummed up because they would never change the oil.
Really?
Yeah.
What year TSXs?
04 to 08.
They had a problem with those?
Burning oil.
Yeah, like every 300,000 miles.
Oh, no.
Oh, they burned oil early?
Especially when people wouldn't change their oil.
Because they had I think it was the second gen MDXs.
Yeah.
So, like 10, 11, 12.
And 13.
Those had
oil
consumption problems.
Yeah. The TSX started it. And then like in 09 to 12, they had the warranty extension. So you had to kind of rebuild the engine in the chassis. And I've probably done hundreds of those.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, rings and pistons and slam it back together. And it's good for 30, 40,000 miles.
And those are burning oil again? Oh,
yeah. 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 But the older ones, it was change the oil, dump a quart of transmission fluid in it, drive it for 15 miles, come change the oil again. That doesn't take care of it, live with it, or put a motor in it.
Juan owns an 06, I think.
Right.
I love those cars.
They're awesome. Sick.
They're 04 to 08 is my absolute favorite, like Acura. The Integra is my favorite, but that TSX, that four-door model with the 6-speed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exceptional vehicle.
They were slick rides for sure.
The TL, you could get the 6-cylinder too. The TSXs didn't have a 6-cylinder option.
Yeah. The TL, the old TLs.
Like that same year range, 04 to 08 was the boxy ones, but they were still cool.
Well, in 6, they switched to that like sleek looking. And then they had issues with like the door panels would fall off. Well, this is when they were old, and you were in a dealership. You probably didn't see this, but you see them come in, and they're like, the door panels are falling apart. And you're like, what the hell happened?
On the 04 to 08? On the 4 to 8? Oh, you're talking
6 and up. Because 5, the CL, you could still get a CL in 5. And
the CL stopped in 03.
Was it?
Yeah. So you're
That's that body style I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That body style.
Yeah. You couldn't buy a four-door Acura after 2004. It was an oath because my brother and my dad both had two-door CLs, and those were awesome.
They were awesome. Yes.
Six cylinders.
100%.
Yeah.
That's
the Type S ones. So they were fast and
they were
fun.
They would fly.
Did you even drive one?
I did. Well, I'm not going to incriminate that person, but yes.
You're a diesel guy. What do you know about Hondas?
I don't know much about Hondas, but I've driven quite a few of them.
Have you?
Yep.
Anyway.
There's a ton of diesel shops here at Vision.
There are.
There
I'm pretty happy about
ton.
That. I'm pretty happy about that because the diesel market has always been way behind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Eric Merchant is responsible for much of that because
and Zeb.
You know, he reached out a while back and we were talking and he's like, man, this just isn't working. He's like, the manufacturing side of things, the performance side of things is good, but the shop side of things is not, right? And he had found the podcast somehow. And I shared kind of my story with him in the diesel performance world. And, you know, the problem is, especially in diesel performance, is that a lot of those guys are already aware of what the part cost. They're aware of how much time they think it should take. And they're not really, I guess a nice way to say it is you got a bunch of young kids who have bought really expensive trucks that they can't really afford.
Yeah.
Right? Because let's be honest about what a diesel truck is. It's meant to work. All right. Now, if you've made it in life and you've got money put back and you want to buy yourself a brand new 2500 Chevrolet that's loaded to the gills for $124,000, so be it. All right. But for the most part, those trucks were meant to work and were meant to haul. They were meant to haul campers. They were meant to haul horse trailers. They were meant to do something. And in a lot of those cases, they were meant to generate income. And that's what makes that $120,000 price tag worthwhile. But in diesel performance, they wanted a fast truck. But in the performance world, many, many, many of those people don't have the money to have a fast truck.
Right.
Right? And so you see so many of these performance shops go out and they're like, well, they won't pay that for it. Okay, that's great. But the reality is your business needs a certain amount of dollars to operate and to be profitable. And if you're not profitable... Well, yeah, but I'm feeding my family.
Not the same thing.
Exactly. We can go get jobs and feed our families.
Sure.
And we don't have all this liability. And we don't have all of this stress. And we don't have all of this other stuff. So why not go get a job working for somebody? And if you have a passion for diesel performance, build yourself a diesel truck. But the two things are not the same. And so to see these diesel shops here, beginning to make changes in their business because all of them are taking management classes, not technical classes. And to see them beginning to take those steps and saying, look, it doesn't matter what map pricing is. It doesn't matter what they think they can buy it for online. I have to make this much money to make the business work. And so now they're doing it. And I think that's effing awesome. Because right. That's where I came from, right? Like I was a diesel performance shop and I was not making any money and it sucked.
I don't know how you do it. It's nuts.
What do you mean?
I don't that all those problems there. I mean, yeah, you can draw the line and say, hey, if you have a service it, this is what it costs. Or here are the parts I can sell them to. You can put them in yourself. That's it. I don't know.
Well, but I mean, they didn't do that.
Right? I get that.
But the
problem then becomes you might not do that any longer, but the three other diesel performance shops in town will.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know. And so now it's like, well, I got to go make friends. Eric might be making friends, but I'm not going to go make friends.
You're not a very friendly person.
Oh, there you go. That's why I shouldn't be running a shop. You're a friendly person.
I try to be.
Well, do you want to shop in Kansas City?
I do not. No.
Are you sure?
The commute would be a bitch, man.
It's kind of warm here.
Yeah.
It's warmer than Michigan.
Hey, we had 70 degrees last weekend.
And so. Then two today.
Yeah. I know.
Downhill.
I know. And outdoor sports starts on Monday for us. So regardless of the weather.
What does that mean?
My boys play lacrosse. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We're going outside.
They're going outside.
Because it's March.
No matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like the assistant to the assistant coach on my youngest son's team. So. I'll be out there in boots and snow pants if it's that cold. But
you should be used to this by now.
I'm used to it. It doesn't mean I like it. But, yeah.
It's too far north.
It is too far north.
Yeah.
Julie and Brian and Greg from ETI all live in Michigan.
Do they really?
Yeah. They say it's nice in the summer, but
it's wonderful. It's awesome.
Is it really?
Yeah.
So it really is. Humid?
It's humid, but like we have a lake, you know, just jump in the lake.
Yeah, I could see if you're like right on the lake, maybe it's not that bad, but I don't know.
I don't think
Midwest and summer just, it's terrible.
I don't think I could live with the, like, sticky 3 days of summer you get in Michigan. I just don't think I could.
Oh, no. No, we get summer for sure by July, but then it will go all the way up into... but then it'll will go all the way
into August.
It'll go all the way into September, October. So it's good.
You have the leaves change, and it's nice.
Yeah. That kind of sounds like it goes from winter to summer to winter. It's almost what it sounds
like. We have like three or four spring seasons too, because, you know, like I said last weekend, it was 70, but now it's zero. And then probably in 2 weeks, we'll get a foot of snow. And then the week after that, it'll be 75 degrees again. So.
Yeah, I'm completely good without that. I mean, it's going to do that at home too, right? I shouldn't say too much. Oh, yeah. It'll do that
the right random up. Like snowfall in April.
Yeah, our last freeze is April 15th, I think, is the average last freeze is April 15th. Okay. Maybe later than that. But
so you don't get big amounts of snow or anything, right?
No, because it all blows away.
Oh.
It blows off the mountain.
Nice.
Because the wind blows 100 miles an hour.
You ever seen the pictures from the back, from his back door? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't, all you see is like the top sliver because there's just snow piled up against the house.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's terrible. Very terrible. Oh. And it gets cold, man. It gets like super cold. People don't realize that. So,
like, what's super cold? Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
On Grandfather, which is about 20 minutes from my house.
So at the very tippy top of this really tall mountain.
Negative 43.
Okay, that's the very top of the mountain.
That's nobody lives there. Wind chill and everything. Okay.
My shop, maybe negative 15, 16 degree wind chills, but that's about as cold as it
gets. That's really cold. That's really cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when the polar vortex hits us, we're negative 15 too.
Yeah.
We're all the way down here.
You're not exactly down here.
We're down.
You're over here. You're not down here.
We're like, down compared to him.
That's
Buck
true.
Buck and Bob is down, okay?
Buck and Bob.
You're over. Right.
That's way down.
Yeah.
That's way
Buck
down.
Buck and Bob is way
down. It's almost Mexico. That's far away.
Yeah. So you asked what's next for us, and we're trying to bring something like this to West Michigan.
Okay.
It'll probably never be to this scale because, I mean, at least it'll take a lot of work, but we don't have training in West Michigan.
Don't you have an ASA organized
like this?
They've got an AASP, and then you've got wasn't the Great Value or whatever show?
Yeah, that was a couple of weeks ago. It was the Auto Value Bumper to Bumper.
Yeah, that's what it was.
You know, Rick White was there.
Yeah.
He actually came the night prior. We asked him to come to Merchant Automotive.
And speak, yeah.
And there was probably 50 or 60 people there.
Holy cow.
Which was fantastic.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you remember this. Like, I basically had a temper tantrum on Facebook one day, and I put it on the ASOG group about no one would take training.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No one would do it. I was hosting it at my shop. I'm going door to door to all, because, I mean, in like the 3 mile stretch that my business is on, there's probably 100 bays of auto repair.
Mm-hmm.
There's just tons of them. And no one would show up to the training.
Yeah.
Like, it's free.
Yeah, and that's the problem, though. It's free.
Yeah. I'm like, and a couple shop owners are like, well, I don't want to send my text because you're going to try to poach them. I'm like, okay, well, I won't go then.
Yeah.
Just have them show up. They can eat dinner. You know, we're going to have some.
What do you do with that? I mean, you're going to poach my guys. Like, I'm staffed up. Like, I don't want to poach your guys. And they don't even go to training. Like, what the hell am I going to do with them?
Yeah.
They're always you don't send them the training, dude. Like, they're just going to smash up my cars. And I'll pass. Anyway, you should send them.
but I said I wouldn't go. And that helped. But, you know, the biggest thing was when I posted that on there, I didn't know Eric at that time.
Really?
Not at all. He posted something on there and he's like, well, I didn't even know this was a thing. We'll be there. Cause it was, I think it was late on a Friday. Mm-hmm. I put it on there. He said, I'll be there. It was the following Wednesday or maybe 2 weeks after. And when I got to work on Monday, Andrew's like, did you know Eric was going to be at the training on Wednesday? And I'm like, oh yeah, I saw that. He's like, do you know who that is? I'm like, yeah, I said it was Eric Merchant. He's like, no. Like, you don't understand. Like, he's a big deal.
Yeah. Yes.
And now I know him really well. So.
Yeah. So you definitely know that none of it is true.
Well, I mean, we have a lot of fun together, you know.
He is like, a awesome dude.
He is super great. I think he's, like him and I, we talk a lot.
Yeah.
You know, he actually hired my brother.
Really?
Yep. Yeah. My brother's in need of work and I'm like, you know what? I think that you guys would be a fantastic fit together.
Right.
And,
what's he doing for him?
Writing, service advising.
Very cool.
Yeah. He's here.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Eric brought 6 people here from his place.
Yeah.
But, he's a great guy, you know?
He is.
You know, I can vent on him and he'll vent on me and we seem to work pretty well together.
That's awesome,
man. But now that's we have training events. We try to do them monthly. Mm-hmm. I volunteer his building because it's bigger than mine.
Yeah.
Regularly. He doesn't always know it until a couple of weeks prior. But otherwise, we'll have him in my building and have him in my new building for the ADOS stuff if need be. But so that's what I'm really pushing for is getting more trainers and more instructors to come to West Michigan so that the industry
monthly on-site training in a facility, I think, aside from the networking, because what I'll be honest with you, what has made this more popular or amplified its potential reach is social media.
Oh yeah.
So the ability to come here and go, hey, I know you from Facebook, right? Mm-hmm. The Facebook groups we're in, and we're, you know, so being able to show up to a big national event and you get to see all these people, I mean, that's one thing. But I will say, like, you go to one and then, like, it's like, I already met you, dude. Like, we're not, never, it's like, it's whatever, right? So, from a functionality standpoint, having monthly, like, local, I get to meet all these local people that would have more of an effect on my career. And I can now reach out and go, hey, you've got that piece of equipment.
Yeah.
Can I go look at it? You see what I'm saying?
Oh, like, yeah.
It's now we can build something here if you're doing them regularly and you're coordinating it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the parts stores, I feel bad for our local parts store. My first call is Factory Motor Parts. I love Factory Motor Parts. They're just the nicest people here and they're super cool with me and they put up with all my BS. And one of the head guys comes out to my shop and he's like, man, I just want to get some people to the training. We've got all these training classes available. I just need to get people there. And we buy them pizza and we'll move around the times and stuff. And nobody shows up. I mean, there have been classes where the only people showing up is my shop, nobody else. And so
you might as well just have it at your shop and save them the rent on that location.
Yeah.
I mean, we could, but then I got to like clean my shop up.
No, I don't do that.
No, you should probably go before you say that.
Oh, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad. Don't say it like that. You're a jerk. I'm sorry. I don't have a big red barn and a fancy floor and stuff. He's like, why don't you have LEDs? Because these bulbs.
I was more talking about the
far cheaper.
I was more talking about the ADOS shop with all these like boxes.
And you're
like,
the ADOS shop's a mess.
So the trash. Where's the trash can? We don't have a trash can. Throws it into the shop.
No, I didn't. We had a box with all the trash in the ADOS shop. And you did point out my hanging. He goes, why don't you rip down that insulation? I'm like, what for? He's like, look at it. I'm like, yeah, it doesn't do
anything. There's like chunks of insulation hanging down out of the ceiling. Yeah,
that's the whole thing. Anyway, they can't get anybody to show up to these training classes. Yeah,
it's hard and it's frustrating.
I don't have an answer for them because it's like
not pizza.
Yeah.
You know, like we don't have pizza. We order like noodles and company just so it's different.
Yeah.
The challenge.
Like I'd eat pizza every day. I thought maybe instructors. So we have maybe nationally recognized instructors, but even complexity of class, that doesn't seem to do anything for them. These are GM instructors coming down from GM, and it doesn't seem to like move the needle.
So do they do a decent job of not only teaching GM? Like, because we have one of the AC Delco guys come down, Rob Roth, and he does a really good job of teaching GM EVAP systems, but then branching it into Chrysler and Ford and Honda and Toyota.
I don't think they get car specific, but I do think they try to teach theory and operation and principle. Mm-hmm. And generally, this is how this works. And
I, you know, so share a little bit of a inside association thought. Talking about ASTA, for instance, right? For the association to hold many of these training classes, it ends up costing a lot more. Now, the part companies can host that training. Our area, they can't get them to show up either, right? 5, 6, 7 people show up for a training class. We've talked before about they don't market them well. And just walking into a shop and saying, hey, you should come to this training, you've got to show value to get people to come to that.
Yeah.
But even then, marketing it really well and sharing it, it's very hard to get people to show up for training classes. Now, if you have a group of people, you've mobilized a group, and that group mobilizes and shows up to training because that's what we do, right? The other thing is that it's often easier to get people to show up when it is a owner-hosted training or another shop hosting that training within a group of people, mm-hmm. right? Because they'll show up to that. Now, the poaching thing is a real concern, especially for your bigger shops, because they need those people. Right. They have to have those people. So the bigger shops like chain stores and stuff are absolutely against sending their guys to training. And one of our local ones is absolutely it is against our policy to send our people to training. We'll train them internally, but they don't go to training classes. But
trained internally by who?
Yeah.
You know,
based on the quality of work that they output.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think that's right. A real thing. Right.
Right.
That should be a thing. We need to make that a thing. If your shop is unwilling to send you to training because they fear poaching, there's probably a problem. There's an underlying problem in the shop. Well,
make your techs not want to leave.
Now, I will
pay them to be there, first of all.
Yeah.
Pay them to be there. Make it conducive so they can go. Make it part of the culture. Yeah. That seems the natural fix for this, right?
I mean, my cleaning kid comes to the training. I shouldn't say cleaning kid. That's not fair. He's 18 years old, but
he's not a kid. He's just a cleaning guy.
Yeah.
There is some
this kid. It's a child.
There's some merit to the poaching thing, and the reason I say that is we had classes where and it happened at a CarQuest training class. It happened at an ASTA training class that low key a Schneider employee. Came to the class and stood up and started giving books and telling people that they should come in. Had talked to the instructor in multiple different classes saying, hey, I'd like to give a presentation. I have a great opportunity for the people in your class. And the instructor, be it that they were just chicken and didn't want to stand up and say, hey, no, that's not acceptable, or whatever the reason was, said, yeah, go ahead and stand up and speak to him. And he stands up and he's like, oh, we're going to give you $120,000 a year. We're going to this. We're going to that. Is
Schneider a chain store by you then? Or
they're like a fleet company.
Oh, okay.
And so like they stand up and tell them all this stuff they're going to do them, and then they hand out applications to everybody in the room. And you want to talk about people getting upset.
Man. Oh yeah.
It was CarQuest. It was it wasn't an ASTA event. It was CarQuest. It was ATG is who it was. And so that really, really set us back as far as people in our area that would send their people to training.
I can understand that.
Yeah, that would upset me.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that would enrage me.
But so they were
the audacity.
Whether it was the instructor's fault and ATG, man, they stepped on that like immediately when it happened. Mike Allen reached out to me because he had somebody in the class, and he said, "Hey, I know you're friends with some folks at ATG. Can you reach out to them?" So I reached out to them, and they're like, "They what?" And so they start trying to figure out what happened, and they instantly. they sent out an email apologizing, and they reprimanded the instructor, and then they banned that person from the class, and they did everything they could to make it right.
Does that have to be part of the marketing then? Like, hey, we have a no poach, no solicitation policy.
Maybe that's a good idea.
I mean, if that's what it takes, you know. But I think in the grand scheme of things, it would be, just respect your fellow shop owner. Help him build the culture so that your employees don't want to leave.
I had a good friend, and while we're on the subject, maybe it's a great time to talk about it. I had a good friend that a group of us works very closely together, and this good friend hires somebody from another shop, and that person was also a good friend. Now, this person was leaving anyway, and specifically said to the one friend, hey, don't say anything because I don't want them to know, and I would prefer to be the one to tell them. Mm. So when they told them, that was the two-week notice, and it created this massive rift between two friends because he's like, well, he was leaving anyway. So, sorry, I guess, right? But that, like, when we work in these close networks, I think common courtesy means you need to call them and say, hey, I have somebody applying from your location, and maybe you don't give them the name, but at least say, hey, this is happening.
So, I actually had a guy apply from a dealership that's 10 miles away, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I had a really good friend of mine work at this dealership. And my understanding at that point was he's the sales manager. So I said, hey, Dan, you know, what do you know about this kid? Because he was younger.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, well, I guess I'm going to start off by saying I just became the service manager there, not the sales manager anymore.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh, okay. So
forget I said anything.
Well, yeah. I'm like, well, cat's out of the bag now. Yeah. So, and he's a good kid. He's like kind of dramatic, you know.
Yeah.
There's no paper cuts. Everything's established, like you know. And I'm like, okay, well, now that I know that he works for you, I'm not going to hire him anyway. Mm. But I just reached out to him and I basically told him the same thing that I'm telling you. But I also said, you know, if I were in your position, knowing what I know of your boss, stick to him like glue.
Yeah.
Because everything he touches turns to gold.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it's been. Like, he's a hard worker. He knows what he's doing. Become his right-hand man or his go-to person at 19 years old. And when you're 20, 21, 22, you will move. You will, like, the sky's the limit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there needs to be a common courtesy for sure.
Yeah.
That we work a little bit better together when it comes to those things, right? And I like your shop.
Unless it's a dirtbag shop. Like, there are certain dirtbag shops.
For sure.
You just know. Like,
well,
that's
what I was getting ready to say. It's like your shop. Like your shop. Like my shop. We're all pretty close with our people. Mm-hmm. It's like, they know they can come talk to me. If they need to do something different, let's just talk about it. It's cool. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, whatever you need to do is fine.
Yeah.
And the same with the local shops to me. I'm pretty close with a couple local shops, and we talk like, hey, this person was talking about this or that person was talking about that. Okay. How can we serve them? Right. Because for so long, this industry has served itself and it needs to serve its people. Right. And if we create an environment where we can make that happen, I think our industry is better for it.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of cars to fix.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what this training kind of turned into, is the shop owners and now get together.
Yeah.
And they do their thing and the techs do their thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, now we're talking next month about, okay, we're not even going to have an instructor. We're just going to have these techs get together, and the higher level techs are going to kind of teach a basic electronics course.
Right.
So put that together in a more structured fashion with a mailing list that you can reach out to, text list that you can reach out to on a regular basis, and make that a thing.
Yeah.
Rather than go, well, we want a vision up here in in Michigan. Because like I'm saying, like, you guys already kind of have a show. the big monolith training events are great, but deep down, like those smaller shows like that are going to make a bigger impact.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, it just, you know, that's the dream, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I have an email list of probably 40 or 50 techs and then probably 25 ish shop owners, maybe a little bit more than that.
Well, yeah. That's awesome. Where associations start.
Yeah.
Right. And whether you go and get involved with AASP in Michigan or whatever it is, right. It's that engagement that makes it work.
Sure.
You know, we talk about the board of directors with ASTA and the other shows or the other associations. You can tell who has a good board of directors that's active and out there working because it's the board of directors who make it happen. And the associations that are dying have a board of directors that's like, man, I don't feel like doing this. I don't feel like dealing with that. Right. And that's the only difference between a successful local association and a dead one is the board of directors. So if you've got an association near you that is willing to at least consider being active, I would pull on those resources as much as possible.
Definitely.
All right.
Definitely.
Woohoo! Thank you for listening to the Changing the Industry podcast. If you enjoyed the show, do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast player. And don't forget to set it to automatically download the latest episode. Our efforts with this podcast, the YouTube channel, and the Facebook group wouldn't be possible without the support of our awesome sponsors. So please take a moment, check them out by clicking on the links in the show notes.